is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The court also ruled that his time on medical parole doesn't count towards his sentence, so Zuma will have to fulfill the entirety of his sentence behind bars.
That's Linda Giftash reporting on a South African court order to return Jacob Zuma to prison. Details coming up. Also, Rwanda and Kenya have confirmed their first cases of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. And France is pulling its troops from a key military base in Mali. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. South Africa's High Court has ordered former President Jacob Zuma back to jail to serve out the remainder of his 15-month sentence for contempt of court. It called the decision in September to release Zuma on medical parole unlawful, as Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
There is no evidence South Africa's former president, Jacob Zuma, is terminally ill or incapacitated, the country's high court said Wednesday in reversing a decision to grant him medical parole. The court slammed the national commissioner who granted Zuma medical parole in September, calling the decision irrational and based on irrelevant considerations. Zuma was found guilty of contempt of court in June and sentenced to 15 months in prison for failing to appear before a national inquiry into state graft. The 79-year-old's arrest in July sparked protests among his supporters. The street action spiraled into riots and looting in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal and the country's economic hub of Gauteng. Threats of unrest were previously cited as reason to support Zuma's parole application, but in Wednesday's ruling, the court deemed it groundless for releasing an offender. The court also ruled that his time on medical parole doesn't count towards his sentence, so Zuma will have to fulfill the entirety of his sentence behind bars. Opposition Democratic Alliance leader John Steenhuisen called the judgment a big victory for the rule of law and the principle of equality before the rule of law. The former president's education charity, the Jacob Zuma Foundation, called the court's ruling clearly wrong and said his legal team has already filed an appeal. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The first major study of the Omicron variant of COVID-19 shows it causes less serious illness than previous strains, but it is also more resistant to one of the most widely used vaccines. The research from South Africa's biggest health insurance firm, Discovery Health, has found that Pfizer jab gives 33% protection against Omicron. But as Darren Taylor reports, scientists around the world are viewing the study outcomes with cautious optimism.
A team of scientists appointed by Discovery analyzed almost 80,000 Omicron cases. These were identified in the 3 weeks since genetic sequences in South Africa first detected the variant.
I think what's exciting about ours is that being at the center of the world's Omicron outbreak here in South Africa at the moment, we've been able to be the first to test vaccine effectiveness at scale.
Discovery CEO Dr. Ryan Noach told a news conference yesterday the study offers more than a few reasons to be hopeful.
The results show that the Pfizer-BioNTech double-dose vaccine, in other words, what we would call fully vaccinated people here in South Africa, they have a 70% reduction in risk of admission to hospital after contracting an Omicron infection. So they are 70% less likely than an unvaccinated individual to require hospital admission or to contract severe disease.
He says the Pfizer shot offered 93% protection against severe disease caused by the Delta variant. The vaccine provides 70% protection against serious illness caused by Omicron, representing quite a big drop in vaccine efficacy.
This really reinforces the case for the need for boosters. We are strongly of the view that boosters will again lift this vaccine effectiveness number, perhaps closer to where it was.
Noach says a preliminary and cautious finding is that Omicron is indeed a milder variant than Delta, at least in the South African setting.
Our data shows that the Omicron wave that we're experiencing now is 29% less severe than the Delta wave. In clinical terms, you're 29% less likely to experience severe illness or require hospital admission in this current Omicron wave. We've heard lots of anecdotes.
He says anecdotal evidence from local hospitals, doctors, and medical associations suggests Omicron has several nuances when compared with symptoms caused by previous variants.
That illness itself is characterized by some of the same features, a sore throat, a fever, a headache, but particularly by myalgia, which is pain in the muscles. And a common feature actually seems to be lower back pain that a lot of people are reporting. Most people tend to get over this quite quickly. In hospital, we're seeing less respiratory distress.
Noche says medical professionals working with Discovery are reporting that patients who are vaccinated aren't getting very sick with Omicron. He says up to 35% of patients during prior waves of COVID-19 needed intensive care and ventilation. During the current Omicron wave, this has dropped to just 13%. But he adds, people infected with Omicron are still dying.
We're dealing still with a fairly large number and a growing number of deaths at the moment in wave four. So there are deaths. We believe they are attributable to Omicron. The majority of people in requiring hospitalization are unvaccinated. And in fact, about 90% of those who land up in ICU or high care are unvaccinated.
So says Noche, while it appears as if Omicron's milder than previous variants, it's still extremely dangerous. He therefore urges people who haven't been vaccinated to get the jab as soon as possible and for sustained observance of the necessary measures to try to prevent getting and spreading Omicron. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Rwanda and Kenya have confirmed their first cases of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. Rwanda's health ministry says it has detected 6 cases as it pushes for people to be vaccinated. Reuters News says Kenya's health minister, Mathai Kagwe, has confirmed 3 cases of the variant. The World Health Organization yesterday warned that the variant was spreading at an unprecedented rate and urged countries to act swiftly to rein in transmission and protect their health systems. The WHO says since the new variant was first identified in South Africa last month, Omicron has been reported in 77 countries. France is pulling its troops from a key military base in the northern Malian city of Timbuktu. French forces have been operating in the region since 2013 with a mission to fight jihadist insurgents that were destabilizing the area. Regional analysts have pointed out to what they say are major shortcomings in the anti-terror campaigns waged by France and other actors in the region, given the extremists continued to be a security threat in the Sahel. Catherine Field is a reporter and analyst based in Paris. She spoke with VOA's Jackson Mfungane about why France started this operation and if it has achieved its original goals.
Just to give a little background to our listeners, when did France start their mission in Mali?
This particular mission, this anti-jihadist mission, dates back to 2013. And the then president of France was called to help out the Malian government, who were concerned that jihadists were going to overrun the capital of Mali, Bamako. So the French went in there with troops. And, of course, as we remember, that operation was called Serval. It then was renamed into Operation Barkhane. And we have to remember back to those days when, in fact, the French at that time were welcomed not just in Bamako but also in Timbuktu as heroes.
And now that the mission is closing, has France achieved its goals or its mission?
No, it hasn't, not at all. What has changed is how much France is prepared to stay in the region, particularly the Sahel region, when it sees that some of the key players aren't really stepping up to the plate to be able to do what France expects them to do. President Macron is a younger president. He's the first French president who has been born after the colonial era. So he doesn't have the baggage that a lot of the others had. And in fact, President Macron's idea has always been that France will never substitute for state forces, whether they be the force of a government or whether they be the military forces. And he's always said this. So this drawdown that we're seeing, this leaving the last of the three bases in northern Mali, very much goes along with the line that they will help out, but they will not replace local officials. And that's what he feels, that he just can't underwrite this anymore. Mm. Certainly, it does look like a retreat.
Now, what does Mali think about this move? Is the army, the local army, able to secure the country and contain the threat of extremist attacks?
No, they certainly aren't. And there are two big issues at stake now. So who's going to go into this area? Who is going to be the key player in northern Mali? Well, one of the big problems there is back to where we were. Al-Qaeda affiliates, Islamic State affiliates, who have been in that area for so long, they will take up that bit of territory. That's what it's feared. What the French are hoping for is that this sort of new European force called Tabuka will take over and will do the, if you like, the, they will be the backbone of that. But the problem is that you've got very few countries within Europe who are prepared to put their forces there. You do have a Swedish, a Czech, and Italian forces as part of that. But it's a very small and a very separate European defense force. Another part of it is that the French really do not want to do patrols anymore. They do not want to be have their forces on the front line. So what they're relying on is really air support. Now, that air support comes from the Americans. They want the Americans to give more logistical support, particularly from their base in Niger.
And I remember that that was part of the conversation right after that whole kerfuffle with the submarine deal between the U.S. and Australia, where I think France was requesting that the Americans maintain support in that region in terms of collecting intelligence.
Indeed, that was really, if you like, that was the payback that French President Emmanuel Macron wanted, that Emmanuel Macron and his defense and foreign ministers were all saying that they were taken very much by surprise that America, Australia and the United Kingdom had done this deal behind their back and that the French were left out of it. And in return, President Macron was pretty tough when he said, OK, well, this is what we expect in return. We expect those logistical bases in Niger to be kept open and to be used for that particular purpose. But, you know, Jackson, there is another component that we've got to look at, which is how the French public view this engagement in Mali, particularly the human toll as well as the financial cost. 52 French soldiers have died in combat there, and it's harder and harder for the French president to tell his electorate that they need to be there, when in fact what they're looking at is that they just can't really get any further there, and it's going to be easier to sell to the French electorate if they say, okay, we're moving out of northern Mali, we're coming further down to the south, and from those bases in the south, the French troops will actually be able to secure the far more precious region, which is Côte d'Ivoire and Senegal, where a lot of French companies have got financial resources there.
Catherine Field is a reporter and analyst based in Paris. She was speaking to VOA's Jackson and Fungani. Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi says the Southern Africa Development Community will meet to consider military support to help the Democratic Republic of Congo quell conflict in the eastern parts of the country. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
This year, the Southern African Development Community dispatched troops to fight insurgents in the troubled Cabo Delgado region in Mozambique. Now, Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi says SADC's organ on politics, defense and security will meet to consider similar support to help fend off rebel groups in eastern DRC.
We are resolute to make sure that the insurgents in Mozambique end with their attempts in Mozambique, never to be repeated or attempted anywhere else in the region. So we want to keep this place forever peaceful and safe for investment and living in. The same goes for Eastern DRC, where there's some simmerings of new troubles, we will lock our heads together. Obviously, as the organ, and I'll be in consultation with my chairman, President Ramaphosa, and the incoming chair, Reg Gengob, and we will report to the chair of SADC what it is that we are able to do or need to do or establish as we dialogue.
Masisi made the comments after a meeting with SADC chairperson Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera in Gaborone on Tuesday, where the two discussed peace and security concerns in the region. Masisi recently ended his term as the head of the SADC organ on politics, defense and security, and South African President Cyril Ramaphosa now is chairperson. DRC neighbors Uganda has already sent troops to the vast African country to help restore order in the eastern part in an armed conflict that has displaced more than 11,000 civilians. Uganda and DRC agreed on the military action after militias operating in both countries were blamed for deadly bombings in Uganda. Chakwera says they are also keeping an eye on Eswatini, which has been drugged by pro-democracy protests since June.
What we need is more democracy and not less. What we need is more cooperation and more talking to each other, not shouting at each other. What we need is more understanding so that the people of Eswatini can realize their aspirations despite the fact that there is a kingship that all of them ascribe to. So we will work with the region and we will work with the established instruments to make sure that all things are done right in Eswatini.
SADC has been criticized for its handling of the deadly protest in Africa's last remaining absolute monarchy. But Masisi says the regional bloc is committed to finding a lasting solution.
Clearly, Eswatini is on the radar. We will keep it under watch as the organ through the chair, Ramaphosa. We will keep updating the chair of SADC. Really, I say these things to show that SADC is fit, is alive and well.
SADC has claimed success in pushing back insurgents in Mozambique, and Chakwera and Masisi say the aim is to ensure peace in the 16-member region. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
The disfiguring disease Noma, found mainly in poor areas of sub-Saharan Africa that lack health care, kills 90% of victims, most of them children. When left untreated, Noma is preventable, and to that end, aid groups are urging the World Health Organization to add Noma to its list of neglected tropical diseases. Henry Wilkins reports from Kongosi, Burkina Faso.
8-year-old Amadou Compaoré recently recovered from Noma, a little-known tropical disease. Although Noma has scarred his face, Amadou, relatively speaking, is one of the lucky ones. If Noma is diagnosed within the first few weeks of infection, it's easily treatable with a course of antibiotics. His father, Sibiri Compaoré, told VOA he noticed the disease in the run-up to Christmas. To begin with, Amadou said his mouth ached to the point where he couldn't eat anymore. He even had great difficulty drinking sachets of water. Compaoré took his son to the nearest city, Kaya, about 25 kilometres away, where medical staff were able to identify the disease thanks to awareness building by the Swiss non-governmental organisation Sentinels. Sidi Omar Boena is a nurse at the Sentinels Medical Centre in Ouagadougou, specialising in the treatment of Noma.
Parce que la plupart de nos agents de santé au Burkina ici beaucoup ignorent la maladie de Noma.
He says most health workers in Burkina Faso have not heard of the disease Noma, and that diagnosing it in people 400 to 500 kilometres from Ouagadougou is very difficult. He says that he's sometimes forced to diagnose Noma with photos sent to him by WhatsApp. Odette Seren, who also suffered from Noma, now receives regular follow-up treatment at the Sentinels clinic, including support in finding a job. She now works as a tailor, but she says people still laugh at her, which makes her sad. She says Boena has done a lot to take care of her, however. Noma is just one of many illnesses currently missing from the World Health Organization's list of neglected tropical diseases. Doctors Without Borders, a medical NGO, is running a campaign to have NOMA added to the WHO list, which already includes diseases like rabies and dengue fever. Claire Gentet is the director of the NOMA campaign for Doctors Without Borders.
At community level, because there is, of course, discrimination affecting the patients. And so every time there is a case, we might not even be aware because they are hidden by the communities or they are dying. More than 90% of people are estimated to die.
The WHO says when it adds diseases to the list, factors like social stigma and death rates are taken into consideration. The WHO says resources are limited, so some diseases have to be left off. WHO press officer Ashok Molu explains the effect of adding a disease to the list.
It really brings the disease or the condition to another level. It also adds to the advocacy part of the disease, awareness creation, and also resources.
As for Amadou Compaoré, he says what the doctors have done to help him has been an inspiration. Compaoré says he wants to become a doctor, to treat people so that they can be cured, like him. The WHO plans to make possible new additions to its neglected tropical disease list in 2023. It remains to be seen if NOMA will be among them. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kongusi, Burkina Faso.
A human rights watchdog has urged the United Nations to deploy monitors to Sudan's Western Darfur region. Mohamed Osman, a Sudan researcher for Human Rights Watch, says tribal clashes over the past year in Darfur has left a trail of devastation. He says since October, at least 183 people have been killed and thousands displaced, some crossing into neighboring Chad. According to the Associated Press, the recent violence between Arabs and non-Arabs in western Darfur worsened after an October military coup removed Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok's government. The Darfur conflict began in 2003 when ethnic Africans rebelled, accusing the Arab-dominated government of al-Bashir of discrimination. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhid in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 15.